You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Dr. Kim. Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. Oh my gosh, it has been years.
It has been years. Thank you for having me back on the podcast. It's so great to see you again and talk to you about play. It's like a full circle moment right now.
It really is. Okay, you were one of my first interviews when I first started my podcast, and you and I were just talking about how when we recorded this beautiful conversation, and it was like the very beginning of my podcasting days, and then like the files like didn't actually record, or I lost the files or something happened, and then I had to come back to your house and we hung out and we recorded again, and you were so lovely about it. But I it's so wild because, you know, in that conversation we explored this idea of play as a parenting tool, and now all these years later you have a book, Parenting Through Play, and I'm just so thrilled to get another chance to talk to you about play.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, that was a good time. It was a good time. We had two times together to talk, and now this is our third time talking. And you're the one who helped me launch my podcast. I had no idea what podcasting even meant until you taught me those things. So yes, we go 10 years back, I think, at this point.
Oh my gosh.
And you have your new book coming out too. I just feel like we're just having these full circle moments, you know, all around. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's exciting to be one of your first guests and now back again with an actual book, like a real book that I wrote. And it's pretty surreal. It's pretty exciting.
You did it. And I'm so excited to dive in and just have an updated conversation, right? Like years later, you and I both have so much more like lived experience, but we've also now, like what happens with the book, right, is you take all of these things that you've learned through your clinical work, through your lived life experiences. And I know from my process was it was like a decade of brain dumping and then eventually deciding to pull it all together into something, you know, and I don't have courses. I don't have anything else. It's all in my book, Mom Needs a Moment. And now I imagine for you a similar process of just all of these years and finally having something where you can pull all the threads together and walk folks through something. Like someone can listen to all my podcast episodes and like get a sense of like what I walk my clients through, but it's something else to have it all pulled together in one place where you can pull in the personal stories and the clinical stories and the steps, the process, right? The journey. And so I know that that's what you do in your book, and I'm so excited to talk more about it.
I am too. And it's true. And I've had, you know, almost 20 years of clinical experience working with families and children. And then I have 12 years experience being a mom of two children. And so, yeah, exactly. In the book, I tie in those personal ways from my own parenting journey. And then also 20 years of experience as a play therapist, you know, with my clients. And, you know, I remember thinking to myself, you know, all those sessions I had, and parents would come to me and say, you should write a book, you know, or I wish I had a book like this. And it's been so many years in the making, but I'm like, here it is. So I'm pulling in the play therapy room for parents to utilize a lot of those same strategies I've used as a clinician at home. And then also, you know, have sprinkled in some personal moments as well of how I've actually utilized these practices and strategies in real life with my own children and with my clients, but with my own children too, because I feel like they're my biggest testers. You know, if it works on them, I feel like it'll work in other homes as well, right? And they're my biggest critiques, right? They'll be like, yeah, mom, can you please do a play therapy technique to get me to clean my room today? And I'm like, sure, let's go for it.
Oh my gosh.
And they'll tell me if it works or not. I'm like, yeah, no, that didn't work. So I've tested, you know, real life practices on them for years. So
that's so cool that they'll literally ask for that. Okay. Well, I want to start here. I'm so curious of, you know, what drew you to play as the entry point for parenting work? Because that really has been a thread through, you know, every conversation I've had with you, all the work that you put out there. Why play as the entry point for you?
You know, I take it back to when I was in grad school and, you know, we were doing electives, you know, when I was getting my master's and then my doctorate in psychology, but as an LMFT. And there was really no courses on child therapy. And I know we're a lot, very few and far between. Most of my colleagues and other clinicians, including my own husband, who has a full-fledged private practice and, you know, working with adults, working with couples. And I just fell in love with the first play therapy class I took. And it was actually through a different university. I didn't even take it through my own university because they didn't offer any. Until I came along and I mentioned, actually created a course. I created an elective, a play therapy elective that I'm teaching years later, right? And taught that for 10 years. Yeah. But it didn't exist. And I think, you know, and when people ask me in my community, you know, can I have a resource or do you have a referral for a child therapist in the area, you know, anywhere in Southern California, and I don't have that many because there's not that many of us that work specifically with children and, you know, as a family systems as a whole and or with parents specifically. So, so I just found the passion. I love working with children. I worked in schools for many years. And so that gave me an idea of working with children of all different ages. And then as a parent, you know, living it firsthand, like I said, and play just invigorates me. When I would work with adults and couples, I would get so exhausted. I would get emotionally exhausted. I'd be physically exhausted. And when I work with kids, all of a sudden the session would be over and I wasn't done yet. I wanted to keep playing and keep working with them. And change was a lot more evident. It was harder to see the change when I worked with adults, or it took a lot longer. Change happened more quickly in the therapy room when I was utilizing play therapy as the source. And so it was just very rewarding working with them. It was invigorating. It gave me energy and it really gave my purpose. And so that's where I found, like, this is my passion. This is my niche. And this is where I want to go with my work. And it's been a lovely journey along the way.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I have a quick question here. What about for the listener and for myself, who sometimes play does not energize you, right? Or feels really, really hard to lean into. You know, my dad was a really playful dad. I know a lot of folks didn't have a strong model for that, but my dad was really, really playful. And I found when I became a parent that there's plenty of things that I wanted to break cycles of when it comes to my own family. That was one that I, you know, one little legacy I did want to keep going. And I knew from, you know, the research how important play is. It's the way that a child learns. It's the way of, it's a beautiful entry point for connection and building that connection capital. And yet I don't love it all the time. Don't have the energy, don't have the capacity. I know a lot of the women I work with and moms and parents I work with would also say, I feel a lot of guilt or sometimes even shame of just how much I don't really love playing with my kids. I'm tired. I'm like, don't have ideas for creativity and I don't want to do it. So for that parent that's listening and that's feeling some of those things and they're stuck in that little hole, first, I want to say, I hear you. I am you. I feel you. And I'm so curious to hear what you would say for those parents, right, who don't maybe naturally feel that sense of energy around play.
Yeah. And it's such a great point to talk about. And I actually have a whole chapter on it because it's such a relevant topic around the work that I've done and the feedback I've gotten from parents, specifically moms, you know, on that. And first, I want them to know that they're not alone. And even I have those moments and those days where that's the last thing on my mind. And I remember when my son was born, my daughter was just a toddler. She had just turned three. And I remember being in a rocking chair. I just was still recovering from a C-section. I was exhausted. I was in pain, nursing my son. And my daughter, who has been the only human in my world for 3 years, and now all of a sudden there's someone else she's sharing that time with, and she just kept asking me to play while I'm literally nursing him in a chair, you know, trying to recover from the surgery. And I just said, I kept saying no. And I said, I'm so tired, honey. I'm sorry, I can't play with you today. Or I have too much to do. You know, I have to feed your brother and do this and do that and, you know, make dinner and do the laundry and catch up on bills and all the things that we talk about on our mental load. I had a lot of guilt around that. I still remember that moment like it was yesterday, a lot of guilt around that. Mm. And like you said, shame that came with that too. And so the way I've designed the book is in my method of parenting, if you will, through the book, and the lens I use is first debunking the myth that play means you have to sit on the floor and have active dialogue with your children. It does not. And those times are important. And if you have those moments to connect with your children and the time and the energy, go for it. Those are important moments to have with your kids. They really are. But that doesn't have to be like that. You know, you can put in, I call them purposeful play pockets of time that are just are micro ways to play and be playful with your children throughout the day that really don't take much more time or energy. And I also know that, you know, when it comes to tantrums and meltdowns and power struggles and defiance and all the things that, you know, make the parenting journey so fun and also so challenging at the same time, you know, that takes a lot of time and energy, right, to deal with all of those things. And so when parents come to me and say, well, I don't really have the time or energy for play, that takes, you know, so much of that too. And I say, okay, both play and the problematic behaviors, they both take time. They both take energy to diffuse and to deflect and all of those things. But would you rather spend your time and energy trying to put out the fires, having power struggles, dealing with the tantrums, dealing with those things, or use that time and energy to playfully connect with your kids in this playful, connected way, in leading to more peacefulness in your home? They're both going to take time and effort, but which path are you going to choose? And so a lot of times they'll say, oh, I want to choose the playful, peaceful, you know, way. And I say, sure. Okay. Let me teach you how to do that. And let me support you through that, because a lot of parents don't have that innate sense to play. As adults, we're taught in society that once we're adults, we're mature and we don't play. That play is for children. And so a lot of times they spend time really reconnecting parents to their inner child. So they let those inhibitions go. So they let that, the fight that they have that they don't want to play. Maybe they have anxiety around play. Maybe they didn't come from a playful home, all those things. And really giving them the grace and the opportunity and permission to say, it's okay to play. It's okay to look silly. It's, you know, it's okay to be like that, and teaching them ways to do that. So I'll give one really quick example and then we'll move on to your next question, because I could talk about this all day. But even just little, the way with the language we use, or even just when you're at mealtime, I have a whole chapter on mealtime because that's also a pretty, you know, so relevant in our parenting culture of getting kids to eat, you know, new and less preferred foods. So, but even just, you know, switching out a fork for a pair of tongs and having your child eat with tongs that day, you know, for that meal, right? It's fun. They think it's the best thing ever, but you didn't have to do anything else with it. You didn't have to sit on the floor and play and have all that time with them. It could just be one small mindset shift or one small tweak and modification to your mealtime or to what you say to them to in order for them to clean up the room and how you present it to them. So they will do that. And you also, you know, eliminate those other things too. So sometimes it just takes something small that doesn't take that much effort.
Oh my gosh, I love this idea of micro moments of play. And just this example that you gave, because that was going to be my next question. So like, okay, give me some of these, like, I want like tangible examples. Like, what are these micro moments? And yeah, mealtime, just introducing something novel, right? Which, 'cause I think you're absolutely right that where some of the overwhelm, I think, around play can show up is this idea of sitting with my kid, like on the ground, right? Like engaged in their pretend play world and, you know, being able to tap into that and having the energy and capacity for that. And also, I think knowing that when there's a boundary around that, that they're going to be disappointed, they're going to want more, and like, I can't give more, and there's multiple kids around, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and yes, I think that it's so meaningful to have carved out space for one-on-one time with each of my kids. And, but I find that even with those times, if I can find something where, you know, I can get into it too, right? So with my youngest, that might mean just going for a walk around the neighborhood and like letting her imagination be the guide and just like really leaning into that for that walk, right? Or with my oldest, going like having like a planned day where we're gonna like go, like she's 14, so right now it might look different. It's like different than when she was little. It's like a girl's dinner, right? Or going for a boba run, or going to get our nails done or something, right? And with my son who's 11, it might be like, you know, going on a bike ride, or like scheduling, like him and I went recently on like a zip line thing at the zoo, and it was just the two of us and so great, right? And it's like these activities that I find that like I think are easier for me, but these are bigger events, you know? And so I love this idea of micro moments of novelty, which is what that sounds like, right? And that just brings like a levity as well to a moment. Is that track?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, in the research, you know, everything I share about in the book comes from three evidence-based practices, three evidence-based modalities: play therapy, solution-focused therapy, and positive behavior interventions and supports, otherwise known as, to most people, PBIS. You know, but those are really, when combined together, which has never happened before, is the trifecta to achieve this deeper connection, more positive communication, and better behavior. And so everything's, you know, backed by research. And then also, like I said, tried and true by, you know, yours truly in the clinical space and at home. And, you know, the research behind it, in the scientific part, I don't do a lot of science theoretical moments in the book. It's a very practical, modern how-to where you can flip to that particular chapter, whether it's taming tantrums and managing meltdowns, or the chapter on anger and aggression, or defiance, or anxiety, and how to regulate and things like that. You can just flip to that chapter and find very quick how-to tools and the creative strategies that you may not be able to think of in your own in the moment on yourself, but I give them to you, and you can flip right to that of whatever you're dealing with and say, okay, what can I deal with this? And it's just tons of tools in the toolbox for you to use based on whatever challenge you're facing at that moment. But we do get those happy hormones when we play. We do get the dopamine, we get the serotonin, we get the oxytocin, we get all of those happy hormones that do give us energy to be able to do more. Because if we're not regulated, I have a whole chapter on that too. It's my longest one, as you can imagine why. if we're not regulated, then our children aren't going to be regulated, and it's just going to escalate and from there. And so I have a whole chapter, like I said, that where I teach parents and moms specifically how to regulate themselves first and give them ways to do that. Just very quick ways, you know, nothing that takes a long time. You don't even have to leave the house. And then also ways for parents to help their children regulate as well. So, you know, it can be more peaceful all around. But yeah, just the micro moments, it's more of a playfulness. Like I said, the language you use, the interventions that you can come up with, to make it playful. The other day, my husband, who isn't usually the play parent, I'm the play parent, my husband is not. Mm-hmm. And my son was having trouble eating his dinner. He wasn't really wanting to. I think he was tired. It was a long day. And so he was kind of leaning up against the counter, at the countertop where we were eating. And my husband just took his hand and he kind of wound up my son like he was a toy robot. And my son's 9, he's going on 10. And like he was a toy robot. And he started just, you know, tweaking his hand, you know, winding him up. And he's like, all right, you know, the robot needs to come out and eat his dinner now. But it looks like he doesn't have a lot of energy, so his battery might be dying. So let me wind him up so his battery starts working. And without even saying anything or reprimanding him for not eating or forcing him to eat or shaming him for not eating or, you know, all the things we usually resort to as parents is our go-to, which I'm guilty of as well, he just used this simple play technique and just wound him up like a robot so he could have enough energy to eat his dinner. And then he did. No power struggle, no fight, no yelling, no, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah. It's those moments that that really can help. And they're not for everyday moments. Half my book is even about play. It's about how to set limits and boundaries and how to, you know, give effective consequences and outcomes too, you know, because there's a need for that too. Yeah. But the first half is really, like I said, that mindset shift. So instead of resorting to bribing or yelling or things that I think I know I was raised with, is just taking that pause and taking that moment saying, how can I make this a playful one? And then, you know, like you said, winding up the robot, getting the tongs out, whatever. It's very simple strategies.
Hey there, if you are a California, Nevada, or New York-based parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience, or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me. I will follow up with you and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you. And how cool, because as you were talking, I was like, of course, our books would be such good companions to each other. I'm not surprised. But as you were my book's called Mom Needs a Moment. And it's literally like, in order for us to access the playfulness part of us, right? We need, as you were talking about your biggest chapter, we need to feel regulated and have the capacity for it, right? Before I can connect with you and be playful with you, I need to have protected margins in order to regenerate the energy and capacity to access something like what could be creativity for novelty, right? To take some of the strategies that you're offering in the book in a moment and recall them, access them, make them my own, make it in my own voice. And, you know, I shared in the beginning of this podcast how my dad was really, really playful. And that was something that I wanted to pass on for my kids and the kind of parent I wanted to be and a legacy I wanted to pass on. And you know what? I think it's a really important thing to name in all this is, you know, my mom carried, I know, a lot of the mental load and like physical load, like the more visible loads too, right, of parenting. She was doing the grocery shopping and the cooking of dinner. And I know she's one that was holding a lot of the anticipating and filling out forms and managing our calendars and our appointments. And, you know, for the times, my dad very much, you know, wanted to be an equal parent. I know he did. And yet my mom carried a lot of the load and we talk about that now, you know? And so it takes having margins and space in order to be able to access those sort of things. And so I think that's an important piece to name as well here, right? Mm-hmm. Which, I definitely talk about and Mom Needs a Moment. It's like, if mom's getting a moment, then we also have to share the load, the invisible mental load. And so I just want to name that, right? Sort of the honoring of my dad was super playful, and also what load was my mom carrying so that he had access to the space to be playful.
You know? Right, exactly. And I do talk about that. Actually, one of the first steps I talk about is, you know, getting to that regulated baseline. So you, like you said, can access that creative side of you, or it's not going to happen, you know, and I sometimes jokingly say, but it's actually pretty accurate and true that, you know, for me personally, like going to the gym is just not my thing. Like I'm like, oh, I don't have time for that. I don't have energy to go to the gym. It's going to take so much out of me. And play is a very similar way, if you know, but when I go to the gym, I end up getting more energy and I, you know, just get, I mean, then one thing might have to get off my to-do list, you know, because it does take some time. But, you know, it's the same type of thing of rejuvenating yourself to get to that point. And you're right. You know, we do carry a lot as moms, and there's going to be moments where it may not happen, right? But there's definitely, and I have a whole chapter, I think it's literally called something like Play for the Exhausted, Overwhelmed, Overstimulated Mom, where I give lots of ideas. Yep. To still be playful exactly with your kids, but not really give that much energy, you know? You know, there's definitely times for that too. And I, again, I just give lots of very quick ideas where the mom can literally say, hey, who wants to give me a spa treatment today? And you get to lay there while they,
Can we get at least like one or two of these examples? Because I think that we could all use these.
Oh, yeah. So the spa is my favorite. My daughter has been doing it for years where she'll see that I'm stressed and she'll say, hey, mom, do you want a spa day? And I'm like, sure. And she'll dim the lights and she'll put on some soft music. And sometimes if we have, you know, cucumbers, I'll cut some up and she puts them on my eyes and she'll get a face cloth and, you know, put a cold face cloth and put it on my head. And I just have to lay there. One time I almost fell asleep. It was lovely. but she would just play spa with me and she would, you know, read me a book or brush my hair. A medical kit can do the same thing. If you have a younger one who has a medical kit, you can lay there and be their patient. They're your doctor. Kids love to put on dances and fashion shows and sing for you. And you just have to be a participant and just watch them while they're doing all the work. And you just get to sit there and relax, really. As long as you're just being present with them, sometimes it's all they need. Or sometimes while I'm cooking dinner or doing laundry and my kids want to play with me, we'll do this thing where either they take like Play-Doh or my kids love to draw their artists. And so they get a piece of paper out and it's okay, mom, what should I draw? And then I tell them, okay, draw me this scene. Or they do like a graphic novel type thing and make a comic book on a story we're building together. But I'm simultaneously working and, you know, doing other things while I'm still engaging with playfulness with them while they're again doing all the work. So there's ways to do it on those days where you just don't have anything left in the tank.
This is so approachable. Thank you for making it this way. I would love to explore this idea of repair and play, because I just think that ultimately we're going to snap, we're going to have hard moments, right? Like it's just, that's going to happen, you know? And I think that it's really, how do you see repair in the parent-child relationship? How do you see play in repair in the parent-child relationship that nothing else quite reaches, right? Like the way in which play can show up in that.
It was actually something that I learned through my kids. And I do talk about repair in the book. I talk about how to do it step-by-step of how to do it, why it's important. You know, the idea of being human, showing your children that you're not perfect, being that role model, but then also, like you said, you know, giving that repair and, you know, why that step is really important in that connection piece, because the parent-child connection piece is really goes back to the idea of trust and safety as the foundation. So if you're continually building on that trust and safety with your child, and you're doing that even through repair, because we aren't perfect, we are going to make mistakes, we are going to yell, we are going to lose our temper, we are going to have those moments. But coming back to it and repairing afterwards is very more important even than the fight itself. That's the most important piece. And so one time I'll share, this isn't necessarily a parent-child, but it can work for a parent-child relationship. My children were arguing. They were in the loft not too long ago, and they were arguing of who was going to clean up what, because we'd asked them to clean up the loft, and they were kind of on their own, and they were arguing together and ended up getting into it. And anyway, one of them went to the room, slammed the door. The other one waited, and we had some time that went by. We didn't expect to happen immediately. Sometimes we need to, like you said, calm down, get our cortisol back to a good stress level so we're back at baseline and we can actually engage in a repair, because you can't do it when you're escalated. It's not going to work. And so my son took this giant stuffed animal. It was a big bear. And he went outside. My daughter was the one who slammed the door and was in her room. She's the 12-year-old. So imagine that.
Yeah.
He's nine. You know, he's a 9-year-old little boy. And he took this bear and he knocked on her door, and he was sitting in the hallway with the bear in front of him. And he knocked on the door and, you know, she asked, what is it? And he said, well, the bear has something to say to you. And she opened the door, and the bear apologized to my daughter because he didn't have, he was nine, and he used play to repair and used play to apologize, which again can be easily done with a stuffed animal or a puppet or anything like that, even a doll, a toy, whatever you want to use with your own child if you're the parent. But he used the stuffed animal to apologize, and he did it through play. And I almost wanted to cry because, you know, it was just such a beautiful moment between them. And I was even more proud that he used play to do it. Because I'm like, yes, this is what works. This is why I wrote this book, for these moments, you know.
And what an indicator of obviously what he has experienced with you over the years, over time, that he was able to access for himself too. What a beautiful legacy. I just picture him one day with his kids, right? Like accessing this. You know what it reminds me of is I don't know why this is the first thing that came to my mind, but, you know, the Bluey episode, you know, it's not the finale. I guess there's going to be more, but, you know, at the end of the last Bluey episode where we see, you know, Chili and Bandit as grandparents, and we see Bluey comes to visit them with their child. And like, there's, you know, obviously a thread of these similar games that, that are being played here, and just how cool that your son was able to access this. And what I honestly, like, I don't think that there's any better sort of signal as to what this book can offer parents than you being able to share this story of seeing your kids using play to repair with each other, because clearly this is something that you've done with them and that you're offering us the kind of like template for of how we can get there too with our kids.
Yeah, exactly. And he's even done that with me where I'm having a tough day, or, you know, I might be in tears, or just, you know, he just knows I'm not in a good place, and he'll bring out one of my puppets and the puppet will talk to me and try and make me feel better, you know, or the puppet wants to give me a hug to make him feel better. So it's not, you know, actually from a repair perspective, but definitely utilizing play to just connect and communicate with me, because that's their language. That's what they use. And it works, and it's beautiful, and it's great to see it. And I absolutely hope that they do use that with their children too, because when you see it in real life, it's amazing to see it play out.
That's so beautiful. And you know what it's bringing to mind as well is a moment I had with my oldest, who's now 14, who, you know, when her brother, who's 3 years younger, was born, she really struggled with that transition. And I've talked about this in various other places on the podcast, but kind of considering the lens of play, you know, she really struggled. And what we came to kind of recognize is that there was a lot of messaging that she received around like, oh, you're going to be such a great big sister. Are you so excited? You're going to be such a great big helper. You know, all like messages that I think had all really wonderful intentions behind them to kind of like build her up, pump her up, get her excited, right? But when you really look at it through the lens of a three-year-old, like, ended up for her feeling like, I think, a lot of pressure to be the big helper, to enjoy this, to be so excited. And then he was born, and, you know, we didn't know at the time, but she also is a really sensory sensitive kiddo, and, you know, just slow to warm up in a lot of ways, and also has some expressive challenges. So it was difficult for her to express to us, hey, like, this is overwhelming. I don't like this so much. I'm feeling pressure, you know, like all the things, you know, that are, I think, difficult for any three-year-old to express. And then when he was born, she ended up not wanting to be in the same room as him. Like, you could tell she was like shutting down every time he would start to cry. She didn't want to be in the back seat with him. And it was through play that, and through at the time us getting support with a play therapist, right? That helped to help us really see in these moments what was happening for her, and through play that we were able to make some repairs, right? Yeah. Of through play with her little dolls, being able to make a little, you know, sibling figurine cry, and she would kind of show us what the big sister was feeling or wanting to do, and then being able to come in through play with the parent little figurine that was like able to say to her, like, this isn't your job. You know, like, it's okay to be overwhelmed. Oh, this is really loud, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we also were able to verbally tell her, like, our own repairs. Like, you know what? I think that we said a lot of things. Like, you were supposed to be the big helper. But you know what your job is? Your job is you get to keep being a kid. So you get to keep playing. And it's my job as mommy, as daddy, right, to take care of baby when baby is crying or hungry or needing something. And you get to keep being a kid, you know. And, and just through play, kind of exploring, you know. And she was also really scared of swim lessons and learning to swim. So what we did is through play, we would play at home on dry land. We would play swim lesson where she got to be the swim teacher. She got to have the agency and kind of show us, like, and I would pretend to be the really scared kid around the water. And she kind of got to show us what she needed, you know. And that was very repairing for me as a child who really hated swim lessons. And I think I had a lot of anxiety around her swim lessons as well. So it was reparative for both of us, you know. And so incredible how play can show up and be so powerful.
Oh, absolutely. And I have a story in the book that reminded me of revolving around separation anxiety and how I did just that with one of my clients years ago who had separation anxiety going to school and crying all day and, you know, missing their caregivers and teaching them again through dolls and stuffed animals, and where she got to be the teacher and be empowered and then eventually teach the dolls, you know, what to do when she was feeling sad or when she was feeling scared, you know. And she'd, okay, count to 10 and take some deep breaths. And she got to teach them, you know. And I have lots of stories sprinkled in there that are similar to that. Or, you know, it's beautiful to see it, you know, like I said, in happening in real time. Just recently, my son was having trouble sleeping in his own bed, which I know is a problem that a lot of parents experience firsthand. And not necessarily a problem per se, but just an issue that I know comes up a lot. And my daughter said, "Don't worry, Mom, I'll handle this." So she went into his room and she got this big, like, kind of scary dragon stuffed animal he got somewhere. It was like a squishmallow or whatever they're called. And she got it, and it was a dragon, you know, so it was protective, right? And she told him if he sleeps with this dragon, it's going to protect him when he gets scared. And whenever, you know, he needs to, he can just squeeze it tight and, you know, it'll protect him while he sleeps. And so again, she was using the stuffed animal as this protective piece in this play in order to help him sleep. And he had come out like two or three times in the living room. I was up doing homework with her later, then he went to bed a little bit earlier. And after that, he didn't come out again. And I said, "What did you say to him? What did you do?" And she goes, "I used a play technique, Mom, you know, and so he won't get back up." I'm like, "Okay." And he slept to his bed the whole night. You know, there's other strategies I share about too, but that was just one thing, again, you know, seeing it through their lens and how they're using it, and or how this child got over her separation anxiety by teaching her own stuffed animals of how to deal with it when she feels that way. And it's great. But yeah, it's chock full of them in the book, of just very, like I said, practical how-tos on how to deal with all those situations when it comes up as the parent. And then eventually, working through whatever. And I actually have to talk about swim lessons in there too, because that's another story that came up, you know. So there's this very things that the everyday parent deals with on a regular basis that I know is applicable to most parents who are going to read it. So, and hopefully it does help. I really truly think it'll change their lives.
Incredible. And like, so just such a, what better review of your work than these stories of your children, like accessing this, right? Like in their own day-to-day lives, in their own sibling stuff and their own offerings of stepping in and like, and asking you to try to utilize, like it's incredible. And what a gift to the parents who will read your book and the legacies that this work that you've put into this will be a part of, right, for generations to come. So, Dr. Kim, where can folks find you and order your book and gather all of this beauty?
Ah, yes. Thank you for asking. So the book is on sale wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. There's a whole slew of, I think, six different places on my website, which is theparentologist.com. A lot of my blogs are on there. My social handles are on there. You pretty much can, and there's a whole book page on there too. For you, like I said, you can order the book or just type in parenting through play and it should pop up, hopefully. You can find me, I'm most active on Instagram. You can find me pretty much on every handle as the parentologist, but I'm most active on Instagram, and that's where you can just shoot me a DM, say hello, tell me what you think about the book. I would love to hear your feedback on that. And and just connect with any readers that want to connect with me. I'm there for them. And I love hearing the personal stories too. That's really the most meaningful part of getting the feedback on this book, is hearing their personal stories or how they used a personal story. They maybe not an exact example of what I gave, but how they used that and made it their own with their own children. It's very beautiful to see that.
Incredible. Thank you so much. I'll be sure to include these links in the show notes so folks can know, just go directly there, and we'll get you there to get Parenting Through Play in your hands. Dr. Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.